I'll call the meeting to order and please call the roll.
Chair Johnson?
Here.
Vice Chair Wilbur?
Here.
Director Miller?
Here.
Director Wilkins?
Here.
Director Wall?
Here.
And Director Jacobson and Director Kelly are absent, so you have quorum.
Okay, and let's see, in front of you, you have the agenda, you have the minutes, and you have the financials from May. So, without objection, we will consider those approved. Okay?
So, and that you're fine to do that, but you'll note that you're approving the financials without the input of the Finance Committee.
Okay, which is what we usually do.
No, because we didn't have a meeting. You usually proceed with the fact that we've had a meeting.
Have a meeting last.
That you've had a meeting, and that we've made a recommendation that you accept as presented, and that did not happen. And so I'm not saying that you can't do it without that. I'm just saying that would be unusual.
Okay. What's the board? What do you guys think? Go ahead.
So I see a couple possibilities. We just postpone approval of the minutes until we do have a Finance Committee meeting, and then we will address both sets of finances at the next meeting, and then so then at the following board meeting you can approve. We'll review both, and you can approve both. Or we can have in my Finance Committee report, we can go through essentially what we do in the meeting, and then come, you know, and then you'll hear what we have to say, and then you can approve them. You don't have to approve them. You don't have to have a committee approval to approve them.
Okay. So I'm going to take the approval of the financials off of the consent agenda and just have the agenda and the minutes approved. So, without objection, Sherry, you have an objection?
No objection, just a note. Yeah. So, under point four, so second to the last line, it should say outstanding principal, like PAL.
You know, for some reason, I couldn't hear you.
Okay, so just the principal should be principal with a PAL on it.
All right.
And just in general, I think it might sound mm-hmm. a little bit better when we say there was a brief discussion, or the discussion was around, maybe the board discussed, just a little, make it a little more professional.
So approved with changes.
If the board approves of it.
Yeah, okay. Objection to approving. Okay, let's move forward. Public comments. See, I'm not sure we have anybody online that can hear us. Zane, have you been able to get the podcast?
Yeah, I can hear now.
Okay, cool. And do we have anybody that wishes to address the board?
Yes,
please.
I am Jennifer Johnson at the moment, and I have this letter. Back in 2021,
I knocked on doors. Could I get you to sit down and pull one of those mics up?
Oh.
So we can get you on the record.
Okay. All right, thanks. Okay here. Back in 2021, I knocked on doors and sent letters to people living along 8th Avenue from Bonnerfield to Collins and asked about converting the gas. I came up with a list of people that were interested and gave that list to IDU, and they installed a line from their alleyway up 8th to Collins. I don't know what IGU considered or what applications were received that made IGU go ahead with the line. I wonder how many converted in 2022 like we did, and how many do you now have on that line. Unfortunately, we now have to move, but we were building a house on 6th Avenue, the line would have to be extended just over two short blocks. Again, I went to the neighborhood this April and contacted about 17 homeowners, with five saying they were interested. I then visited IGU's office and was told IGU would need two or three more applications. Unfortunately, they have nine, of course. Only one more has shown up, but I've had two others say they would fill out an application. But now I'm told that IGU needs four to five applications. In frustration, I recently gave a copy of the list to IGU, who then sent letters to all those on the list, but that wasn't until June 26th. Over the next couple of days, I will contact the homeowners and get the application sent. But I want to know, why the reluctance when five people say they're interested? There is so much incentive for homeowners. Here are some of them. One, the current price of gas is about $2 less than an equivalent amount of a gallon of oil. That means that a homeowner who burns 1,000 gallons of oil per year, the savings to them would be around $2,000 in just 1 year. And then two, there's the offer the borough is making of $3,000 change out the burner. That means between those two considerations, homeowners who only need to change out the burner would either have their cost covered or close to it. Several homeowners indicated that their current appliance is fairly new, so there's a good chance that all they have to do is change out the burner. Three, there is an improvement in air quality, which was pointed out in the News Minor Perspective on June 24th by three of the board members. And four, if there's any concern about putting a piping in due to the old area of town, the streets of 6th and 7th, between Bonnefield and Cowles, were totally done in 1983, so the piping should be known and easily avoided. In summary, I don't understand the reluctance to put the piping in not only for the couple of streets mentioned, but for all streets around this area that are not covered by hot water or steam. These lots are small, most are not street to street, so for a short distance you get a chance for more customers than most other areas in Fairbanks. To me, it's a slam dunk. Great for the homeowner, the city, and IGU. Please get the line.
Well, thank you for coming. That's the kind of complaint I like to hear. And I think maybe Elena or George can give you an answer or some type of an answer.
Now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you for coming. And thank you for your efforts lobbying your neighbors. To explain a couple of the things that go into our decision making, you referenced the recent publication by our board members in the News Miner. So I'll reference it too. We were able to keep rates stable for 3 years in a row now, and that is in big part because of good management of the dollars that come to us. We only have two sources of revenue that we could possibly use in order to expand main lines on new streets. One is our rates, which we don't raise in order to have sufficient capital to expand into new neighborhoods, and the second is grant funding. We are currently working with a $2.5 million 2023 grant from the state of Alaska, and that is what we are using to expand these main lines on streets such as yours. And one of the duties that we have as a public utility is to apply any funding that we have in a consistent manner. And so, if we're spending $5,000, for example, for a main line that would add one new customer, we have to apply the same rule throughout the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And unfortunately, as of right now, even though there is interest in the neighbors that you've talked about, that interest did not materialize in a new service agreement. From the number that we've told you, And because of that, we can't make an investment decision as of yet. We might be able to sometimes in the future, but we need to have those new service agreements in hand in order to be able to make that investment. And we have to have that those agreements in hand before the time is up. We have to be able to apply for and receive permits and slot main lines into our construction schedule.
My point is that the incentive to change over to gas is so strong right now that no matter where you put these lines in, you'll get the customers. And I will go on by the end of the week, I'll get you the 4 or 5 applications besides mine. Then what?
Should this materialize, we're still accepting applications and approving main lines. We will we'll stop doing that sometimes mid-August, but we are still accepting applications. So should we have firm commitments, your application is approvable, as our customer service has communicated.
Well, that's another thing about the application, that people apply, and then when a line finally gets in, they say, well, we weren't able to come up with the funding. We weren't able to do this. So that doesn't guarantee you that people are going to hook up that application. But the suspicion that they will. But, between now and when the line gets in, they've got to come up with a mechanic to do the work. And that's going to get tough to get pretty soon here. It's already tough, I believe. And there are so many houses on this route for 2 blocks. It's just incredible that you can't come up with customers. Anyway,
well,
I'm frustrated. I don't know what happened in 21, because that line was put in 21 after I gave the list to IGU. Now, I don't know what the follow-up was. I don't know if they went and got applications. Of course, I know I sent mine in. I don't know who else sent theirs in. But that line was built, and I bet you have quite a few customers on 8th Avenue between there and Cowles. In fact, if you added on to it the following year, or 2 years, they went up all the way to Barnett. And, it's going to happen, and it should happen.
Well, thank you for coming. Thank you for your information. And Gary, you have something?
Two questions. So the first one, George, is there any Woodstate pipe involved in this installation?
Yes, all through downtown there's Woodstate piping.
And what Mr. Richardson speaking of?
I can't speak for confidence on that stretch, but I can for the 8th Avenue stretch that we did last summer, that was part of what they were ripping out and replacing. So that's not far from the location in question.
Well, 6 and 7 was redone in 83. I lived there. I know who went through it. And they dug it down, all the way down. And the house we bought was there at the time. The land we bought, the house was there. And there's no water or sewer going to that. Because the water company knows that. They've already got lines in the road where the markings are. But there shouldn't be, unless they put it in 83, there shouldn't be any wood stave.
Okay, well, yes.
The second question. So look, I want to understand the sequence. So Mr. Richardson went out and got the neighbors to raise their hands and say, yes, I'm interested. And you came up with 5?
5, yeah.
Okay, and so then that was just a intention. So then, what's the next thing, Earl?
The next thing is IGU Customer Service got involved. We used the list. We also sent postcards to people who were not on the list but were in the vicinity. The postcards have a QR code as well as all of our information that takes straight to the application. I would have to check with the customer service on the specific on the specifics of how many we have right this moment. I just looked in my inbox. The last time I gave guidance on this specific main line was on Wednesday. I'm familiar with the situation. All main lines get approved by me. It is not in an approvable status as compared to the other lines that were approved this year.
So if we went back to the five, we had the names, and those five declined to sign the agreement where they have to hook up 6 months after, so they take that formal step.
Correct.
So out of the five, how many took that formal step?
I would have to verify. How many did. I don't know right now.
Can I make a comment? First of all, my understanding is the letter was sent to all on that list, 17. And I had their tax address, so they should have got it. And that letter wasn't sent until June 26th. So to expect a response having the 4th of July being involved at this point is not a little optimistic, frankly. But I'm going to go back to the 5 this week.
Okay. Let's wrap this up. Jim, I appreciate you coming. I agree with you. It's in our interest and the customer's interest to get gas into the customers. Elena or George will follow up with you and kind of give you some specific information. I think there is an avenue to get gas line in your area yet this summer, that they laid out for you. So, maybe if you would do a little bit more legwork and get some somebody to sign up so that we can get on with that process, that would be good. And again, thank you for coming.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay. The next item on our agenda is Middle Forks, and I'm going to give that to Elena.
Thank you, Chair. Tonight we have Roger Brown, the General Manager for Middle Forks, and I'd like to give it to him to go through his presentation.
Thank you. So my goal today is to do the incidents that occurred during the first 6 months of the year, give you the corrective actions we've taken, and where we are today. We've had 4 incidents during this period, 2 significant accidents, and 2 minor road departures. The most important takeaway would be no injuries, no interruption to service, and every load that I needed was delivered. Each incident has resulted in operational improvements that we hopefully will see in the next few slides. So this map provides a little context. All 4 incidents have occurred on one of the most challenging commercial trucking routes in North America. 2 incidents real close here at Fairbanks on the Elliott. The one just outside of Dead Horse, and one just north of Arctic Circle. All in very different circumstances and conditions. And I'll briefly walk through each one individually and then the next slide. So the January incident was a preventable rollover involving excessive speed for conditions, and we've accepted that finding. This was the big one that had all of your attention with it. The trailer was declared a total loss. Thankfully, the driver was not injured. From IGU's perspective, the most important point is that the service never stopped. We also ordered a replacement trailer with incorporating the new and improved design, multiple new improvements, which should be here in August. That actually forced us to look at critically at our safety culture, and a lot of our improvements stem from this incident. So we'll see later on. Go ahead.
I was wondering if driver fatigue was rolled out. Was it completely a speed?
Yeah, he had plenty of rest. He was a new driver with about a year and a half with the follow-up experience. He was following behind a more experienced driver. They were talking on the radio. He was just, it's appropriate the name OS Corner for a reason. There's a long history of incidences there, and he just, 90% of his trips prior to starting LNG with us was empty from around that corner. And so from north on loaded versus south on loaded, there's a whole different set of hills and corners you have to worry about. And he wasn't, obviously he's going a little bit faster than the guy in front of him, but it was just too fast for conditions, and he, you know, just rolled over. So yeah, it definitely wasn't fatigue related. And any one of these, any questions you guys have for any one of these incidences, you don't have to wait till the end. Any more questions about this one?
You know, my concern, and the reason I asked this to be brought to the board's attention is, you know, obviously life and limb is important, but my concern was not necessarily that. It really was the way IGU is perceived in this community. And you know, you start getting, you know, two rollovers in 6 months, you've got to make some changes. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, obviously, you know, I appreciate you showing us what has happened, but, you know, what I'm more concerned about is what are you doing about it?
I'll get to that in the later slides.
Okay, please.
But I mean,
we are
doing a lot of things that hopefully will help. Nobody can guarantee that we're not going to have any incidences or any more accidents. Overall, from during the winter months, we did very good compared to every other truck in the country. There's 30 some odd instances this winter, and we had one. Everything that's happened since then is a whole different story. Like I said, they're all under completely, totally different circumstances. We had a very, very good winter.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah.
Gary?
Well, lower the rate if I could. So let me, if I could, just highlight what you said and ask you to focus on.
Gary, would you move up to the mic?
Oh, I'm sorry. What you said. So you said the thing most important to IGU is we've got our loads. Our loads. And I agree that's important. But we should never assume that that's the most important thing for IGU.
If I said most important, that I meant no injuries would be the most important.
So what you meant was second most important.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for that. The other thing is, speak to us about the design improvements. Was that on your tractor? Or
on the trailers.
Is that what took place back in Texas, Georgia?
Yes, that was part of Roger and I's trip down there. Mm-hmm. Middle Fork came alongside Jeremiah and I, and did a review of some of the design changes that are going on with heavier axle with drum brakes, differently reinforced lift axles that are going to be more durable, and then just a handful of other changes that we've been implementing as we move forward.
So those changes are being put in all our trailers, or just new trailers?
Just the new trailers.
Okay, thank you.
And this trailer that was total, and this accident, we replaced it with one of the new ones. So,
thank you.
All right, next slide. Unlike the January incident, this one is still ongoing. We had driver facing cameras. He appeared alert immediately before he went off the road. We have talked to some other drivers on the road, and we're waiting on some more footage. So the investigation is still ongoing. Although the tractor was a total loss, the trailer should be repairable. Premier was up here last week and did an inspection on it. I don't think we have, I haven't seen a report yet from it, but after talking with them, it's promising that it's repairable, and we'll, I mean, the final decisions and all that will come out here probably hopefully very soon. If and when we do repair it, it will also hopefully incorporate some of those new design improvements. Just by default, you know, with the inner tank, and you get into specifics. The inner tank is good. The outer tank, vessel part of it, if they have to replace that, a large part of that is the lift axle mounts. So I assume, and I hope that the new one, the new outer vessel, would include the new improved lift axle mounts. But that'll all happen. Go ahead.
Excuse me.
Yep, Derek.
Are there two essentially investigations, one on like the assets and what can be reused, and then the incident itself, like what happened and what can be remedied there?
Yes.
And, but, okay.
Yes, yeah. For this one, like I said, every driver-facing camera, driver-forward camera, everything was alert, and everything was operating as normal until the moment came off the road. So we're still... like I said, we're trying to gather more information.
You expect to have that by the end of the month, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We probably should have had that by now, but we're getting it from other people. So.
Thank you.
Trying to gather as much information as we can. It's, you know, it's a month out now, so I don't think it's really going to change a whole lot. That driver's going on now anyways, but we are, like I said, every one of these, on this in particular incident, the camera, the driver-facing camera, and the road-facing camera was tilted a little bit to where we could see everything in both directions, but it wasn't very good, and so we are changing the way we mount all of those cameras because of this incident to get a better view of the driver and road. Derek?
Sorry, one more. And it's my understanding that you have drivers on Middle Fork payroll that work for Middle Fork, but then you occasionally can contract with drivers with their own trucks. And
so,
and so the question is, first of all, if that's correct, and then number two, did any of these incidents involve drivers in your employment, or were they contracted? And, you know, kind of what is the difference there with
regard to... Technically, an owner-operator does work for us. He just uses his own truck. Under our DOT number... all of our policies, our cameras, our insurance. There's a gray line. There's a fine line between a contractor and a owner operator. So.
And when the contractor messes up, is that's a reflection on Middle Fork?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So everything, like I said, we can't do contractors for insurance reasons. We have very, very expensive, hard to get insurance, and not very many companies can do that. So there's no other companies that would be able to, everybody has to be leased onto us in order to pull a tanker. But the first one was an owner operator, and the rest of them have all been company checks.
Thank you.
So yeah, next incident, our next slide. So this one was a very different. Meltwater crossing the roadway during the spring runoff created an isolated patch of extremely slick mud, and normal summertime operations, you stay away from the shoulders, and this driver was in the uphill side of the corner in the super on the very edge of the road because he was loaded and going slow, and he hit this isolated patch of wet slick mud in an otherwise dry corner, and with the telematics that tell us whether the steering wheel was turned or not, steering was turned, just went straight off. Very slow, very minimal damage to the fender on this one. We got it out within a couple hours and delivered the load. No injuries. Minor superficial damage to the trailer. and similar, we had the camera and everything worked as advertised in this, during this accident. And so minor, this is one of the minor ones. I just included it because for transparency.
Would you consider that preventable or non-preventable?
I still think it's preventable. He should have known better than to be that close to the edge of the road. A single vehicle accident is, in our line of work, is always considered preventable. Most of the time, I never say always, but you just stay away from the edge of the road. And where it happened was, it was, there's a lot of extenuating circumstances with it, but there's 10 other trucks that go by there that day that didn't go through it either. So. Next slide. So this incident was determined to be fatigue related. The driver had just completed the required off-duty period and dead horse, but nevertheless fell asleep approximately 46 miles south of dead horse. He had a total of 11 hours in dead horse. Part of that was dropping and unhooking the trailer. He was off and theoretically in sleeper berth the whole time that he was off duty. So this, still not sure. He just fell asleep. Minor damage to the landing gear. We replaced the landing gear. It was delivered about a day late, and we immediately moved that driver from service. And also, this caused us to review some more F-cab driver facing camera, because there's a sun visor partially obscuring. We can still see half of his face. There's a sun visor partially obscuring the camera, which we have AI detection on there to where when you're yawning or if you're tired, if you're about ready to fall asleep, that your truck will start yelling at you to take a break. And this one did not pick up on that because the sun visor was partially blocking it. So again, we're changing the location for the moment for that. The manufacturers for these cameras have rules on where, I'm sure DOT, FMCSA has rules on for where you can't cam off these. There's never a very good location, so we are going to move them down a little bit, and so they're less likely to get interfered with radio antennas or sun visors.
Eric, talk to me a little bit about, you said we pulled in and had to disconnect.
Gary, what do you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. You said he had to pull in, had to offload or disconnect. Is that the word you used?
Yes.
Is that part? That's not part of the 10-hour.
No. No. That's why, like I should say, he was there for a total of 11 hours in town. He'd taken his 10 hours off, and that hour prior to that was him switching trailers. And that was one of the improvements we made. This spring, I can get into it now since you asked. But, so one of the things that will help is we have we stage another truck and extra trailer in dead horse. So we spread out the drivers enough throughout the day. Right now, especially with 4 or 5 loads a day, that it's easier to do. But we have a truck and a trailer sitting there in dead horse, theoretically on the scale loaded, ready to go for our driver when he shows up. So all he has to do is drop his loaded trailer, or take the loaded trailer off the scale, park it, drop his empty tanker on the scale, and then switch trucks. That is 15 to 20 minutes worth of work rather than 3 or 4 hours of waiting to load. So we're doing this to help our drivers not do anything while they're supposed to be sleeping. It's a lot faster. And it will help with fatigue, and it's easier for driver retention because they're not sitting there, and they could be either sleeping or driving. it's already a long day. It's just one thing that we've done to help reduce driver fatigue.
Certainly, yes. In our state,
Gary,
they do something. I'm confused about where do they 10-hour off-duty period? That's a sleep. A sleep period.
Yes. So he was there at that hours total of 11 hours. Theoretically, an hour of that was on duty while he was switching trailers, and 10 hours was in the sleeper berth.
So he could, he just gets out of the truck. He's empty, gets out of the truck, puts him on something, so somebody gets hurt, sometimes will get loaded. And then there's a truck waiting.
There's no driver in the truck. When I brought it up there in the end of May, it was just a Middlefork owned truck and sitting there hooked to a trailer at all times.
So he gets out, and where does the 10 hours fit into that?
After he switched trailers, he basically he went back to Dead Horse and parked and so usually around the airport, right, there's a couple places out between the end of Airport Road and most people sleep right there in town in Dead Horse.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next slide. So this is our safety and operational improvements. All the drivers that were involved in these incidents are no longer employed with us. Full-time driver-facing cameras. Prior to this, we had a probationary period, the first 90 days, or if you had any speeding incidents or anything like that, but now we've changed it to where all drivers have them on all the time. And then we have turned on and made repositioned the cameras for the AI monitoring for fatigue and distraction. So if you pick up a cell phone, it'll yell at you, put your phone down, or if you yawn or wipe your eyes, or if you're tired, it'll yell at you for getting tired. And then I get an email every time something like that happens. So if there's a driver constantly or using his phone, then I'm going to get an email and then I'll have a talk with them. So we hired another local driver to unload trailers here in Fairbanks. And we have an additional truck trailer at Harvest that we just discussed. That's all designed or incorporated to help with.
So when we were at the terminal the other day, and one of your trucks pulled up to unload. That wasn't the line haul driver. That was
most likely that was somebody that works here locally. That's unloading. Sometimes our drivers still have to unload because he doesn't. We have two guys that's their job. They're not all working all the time. Theoretically, as we get farther, closer in the winter where we start hauling more, then we'll just do it. It'll be 24 hours. One will work at night and one will work in the day. It's just easier on drivers that way. It's easier on standby. It's easier for a lot of reasons. Next slide. So safety isn't just about the drivers. We've also incorporated we have our drive-through wash system is completed, which helps with inspections after every trip. We're able to drive through rather than spending hours washing the trailer each time. We'll still wash it really good, and once a week, but we're able to do a drive-through, knocks all the mud off of it, so you can at least inspect it, and it makes a huge difference after every trip. We do have a dedicated wash person. That's all they do is the more detailed washing. We've hired two additional trailer mechanics to inspect and work on these trailers. This time of year, they require a lot of attention. We're averaging 5 flat tires a day right now, and just a whole host of issues. But that's just Paul Road, summertime. Right now, knock on wood, the road's in pretty good shape. April and May, it was not, and they slowly, throughout the summer, get it going pretty good, and then usually around rainy season in August, it'll get bad again.
We didn't haul any loads in May, right?
No, May, we had, took May off. We had a couple stragglers. They shut down making LNG the last, April 30th. We still had a couple days worth of ground fall in there. Next slide. So this is isn't intended to be a performance comparison, but this is just an operational context. December 1st to 30th, we took the May off. 135 days, 808 loads, 11,000 gallons, and 824,000 miles, which is an average of 5.98 loads per day over the entire period. Considering the weather and the last half of April was pretty rough on the trailers and the drivers. Overall, like I said, if it wasn't for our June incidents, I'd say we had a pretty good year. But next to that,
Yuri, you kind of hit what I was on my mind is these corrective actions that you've implemented were this spring, essentially,
yes.
And so then we hit two incidents in June. So I just wanted to kind of gauge your confidence level that these measures that you've implemented will remedy this, understanding that you can't completely eliminate it, and give you an opportunity to kind of convince the board that...
Yeah. I mean, nobody's more frustrated than I am on that front. Like I said, we had a very good winter. I was happy with the way everything was going, and we've had a couple safety stand down, stop everything, and let's sit down and slow down and talk about this since then also. And like I said, we've made a lot of changes here recently, and I'm hoping all of this has kind of contributed to our culture, and that's the main thing, the biggest distractor, which is work. But,
Sherry.
To that point, I was thinking about industry benchmarks. So if we use your numbers there, we can calculate that you have 4.85 incidents per million miles and only 2.43 if we're only counting major accidents or incidents. Some of the public energy sector benchmarks I looked up, like energy transfer, that's in Texas, so I know it's way different here, but it's closer to one preventable vehicle incident per million miles. So I was wondering what kind of benchmark you might be looking at, what we could compare ourselves to here in the Northwest, what Colorado is doing, or Linden, how many accidents are they having?
So the majority of the accidents up north go unreported. I called Ben Stowing and got some unofficial numbers. He's not going to tell me names or any of that stuff. There's two local towing companies, and usually when something happens on the far north end, they'll call crews or IT or somebody can get ours to come down. There is no real published average for up here. Because, like I said, most of them, and theoretically, if the truck is drivable after the incident, it's not reportable. Obviously, we had two that were and two that were not. The week of the January 19th incident, there was seven other trucks off the road in very similar situations. A lot of those were weather-related and road-related. Like I said, two of ours were dry pavement in the middle of summer, so there's no real excuse for that. But to answer your question, I never really looked at it in terms of industry average, because it's very hard to do up here. It's very, very closely held information for each company. But I just know from experience and what I know from this winter. Like I said, until June, we were doing great.
Gary? Sorry, I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. The majority of the accidents on the North Slope go unreported? We don't.
Yeah, if you try to look up troopers from this, it reports from state troopers or commercial vehicles or North Slope Borough.
And
they get cleaned up, and there's never, rarely any incidents.
Okay.
I've had that problem. I testified in transportation committees and on the House and Senate side, and it's hard pulling statistics, especially on the road, like, you know, when we're talking safety or looking for improvements or funding, and
well, and when we say, sorry, reportable, is there a distinction between an accident that gets reported, like, internally through the company channels versus, like, the National Transportation Safety Board, or what is, when we say reportable, to whom and what do you mean?
To commercial vehicle enforcement.
Commercial vehicle.
And then that goes on the FMCSA.
So, why is that? I guess, you know, if you were a professional in the industry, accident reporting would be kind of conducive towards more maintenance and better conditions. Mm-hmm. Why would the companies not want to report their accidents?
Probably insurance and just visibility. I know for me, I let commercial vehicle enforcement know for everything. Whether it's drivable or not, just because I have a good relationship, working relationship with them. I'm pretty sure most companies do not do that.
Well, I did notice George sent out some information concerning reporting to, I guess it's the federal agency.
FMCSA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you reported none. No accidents over the last 24 months, mm-hmm. which, you know, obviously isn't the case.
Correct.
So, we're down in the, and you know, testifying for more maintenance on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You guys aren't reporting what's going on up there.
We are, but if there is no violation attached to it, then that's how FMCSA gets theirs. Even though I think the January 19th incident did end up with a violation. I know there was a ticket issued. I think the ticket got thrown out. But that should be on there, and if it's not on there yet, it probably will be, because there was a violation that went along with that.
Is somebody trying to talk? All right. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
yeah, we report it, and I think the FMCSA website comes from the actual violations. So, if it's not on there, it should be.
Okay. Is this... Are you complete here?
There's one more. So every incident has been treated as an opportunity to improve. Our commitment is no injuries, no environmental damage, no interruption to ITU service. And that takeaway, I think, I'd like you all to have is, each one of these incidents has resulted in a measurable operational improvements. And although I'm not happy with having four incidences in a 6-month period, thought we were better now than we were 6 months ago. And
how many full-time drivers do you have?
10 or 12 company drivers. We have some summer work drivers also, but 10 full-time gas drivers, and then 8 owner-operators.
10 full-time gas drivers, so they're really dedicated to IGU.
That's pretty much all. We have one guy that does Alyeska, and every once in a while does a gas load. Most of the winter he did natural gas, but everybody else, that's all they really concentrate on.
And then how many loads a week do you typically?
Right now we're doing 4 a day, 4.5 a day on average. In the wintertime it was 6 a day, so.
Sherry?
Are you going to keep these statistics going? Because this is great. Operational performance.
I got a lot of that information from the board packet in June, and I kind of cross-referenced it with the days, because those statistics are 135 days. Well, there was 151 days and came December, because there was some shutdown for harvest. I think those are all harvest shutdown days and not necessarily road closure days with weather and ranches. That's a good, it's a help. It makes kind of adds context to all of it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Jack.
So the cameras, are they something that you install at your option, or are they required by regulation to have cameras?
They're not required. We have them. We've always had them installed. Like I said, prior to recently, we had where you had the option of covering the manufacturer has a cover put on over the inside facing camera. And a lot of drivers don't like to have it. We're not sitting there watching. It's hard to convince the driver. I know I don't like it, but when I'm driving, but it's hard to convince the drivers that it's kind of for their own protection. If you run off the road, if I run off the road and I'm not sleeping, I want to be able to prove that I'm not. Or if there's some other incidents that you weren't paying attention to, you were on your phone or something like that, I would rather have that as my own protection. But it is not a requirement, but for top rate, but like for our insurance, they would much rather have it. And that's just our policy.
And are they video cameras?
Yes.
And how many hours do they record?
It's all the time. I mean,
how many hours can it store?
It's all in a cloud, so I can literally go.
I see.
On a computer, and I can pull up any time off of both cameras. And sometimes it includes telematics and how fast you're going, whether your foot's on the throttle or on the brake, your steering wheel's turned or straight. G-forces, like when you hit a big bump, it happens a lot up there, it'll trigger an event. Like when this crash happened on June 20th, or for any of these crashes, it'll trigger an event, it'll automatically record that and send it to us. But like I said, anytime I can go in and pull any video from any time. It helps when we have somebody say, hey, we ran a stop sign, or ran a railroad tracks, or we met somebody too fast, or they, if somebody complains, I can go back and look at it anytime. I just need a time and location usually.
Okay, thank you.
Jerry?
Two questions. Where is the new maintenance facility?
That's over next to 8-Star Event Center. And we are going to have a open house ribbon cutting ceremony at the end of July after Golden Days and summer sports are over. I mean, if anybody of you want to take a look at it any time, we're hoping to move in there here in the next week or two. But you can look at it any time. We can do a walkthrough.
So it's near your original building?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Right next to the old French church and the Stern Bass Center.
So my next comment is, and I appreciate you being here, Roger. This is but I share our chairman's concern. If we were sitting here talking about a death or a serious injury, this conversation would be a whole different conversation. So I think what our chairman is trying to get at is that with his aviation experience, that we don't want something bad. Yeah. So with that said, should we consider having, when we have an incident, maybe two of these incidents, should we think about having a third-party review on certain metrics, the event, and come to us with a third-party opinion for the board? And I don't know, well, we don't worry about money right now, but it seems like we're missing the boat if we don't have that protection of a professional, well, NTSB style, mm-hmm. I think, but not of course that depth. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know, maybe we want to talk about that sometime and see what it would cost to have a third-party review. And because I think it's missing right now.
Gary, I think at least my intent, and it doesn't have to be this way, but was to you know, get Roger to come and talk to us and make a presentation, and then discuss it further in executive session.
I don't think it should be minimized at all. A year ago or 18 months ago, how we were, all of us, management in particular, was scared to death of the trucking option. I mean, I think we all, and you know what's involved, mm-hmm. Roger. We didn't. So I don't want to minimize driving this route on a road that has a TV show named after it. So, but fast forward to today, I'm relatively comfortable with what's happened. I think you guys have done a great job. And I hope Elena and Jack, George sleep better than they were sleeping 18 months ago. And I think they are, and that's because Middleport doing all the work that they've done to get us comfortable. And I'd like to have at least for one board member, put on the record that I appreciate that effort very much.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, and Roger, we do appreciate you coming and you know, giving us the information you did. I don't expect a light switch to flick here and everything's going to change. It really is safety is a mindset, and you know, it really needs to start with you know, the owners, the managers of the company, and work its way down and be embedded in the company. That's really what I hope we encourage you to do, to create that mindset within Middleport. But you know, having said that, and you know, that I don't expect immediate results from this, I really do hope that this board chooses to talk about this a little bit more after we're done here to this meeting. So, anything else, Roger, before we let you get on your wife and kids?
Anytime you have any questions, just or concerns, I'm not very far away, and I'd be happy to come talk to you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Thank you.
How many want to ride?
Huh? I didn't hear you.
How many want to ride?
Want to ride?
Yeah. Ride.
Yeah, there is two very good options. Ride up empty, it's a lot easier and faster. And then fly back. The problem with flying back is you.
I didn't mean the whole
yeah.
trip.
Oh.
Yeah. Just want to ride to Tiger Road.
Yeah. I was thinking Hilltop.
Yeah.
When they get to the Fox way station, you want to ride in there.
Yeah. Drop me off at Hilltop, pick me up for a couple of days.
Okay. Cool.
Okay, any other questions from the board? Sherry, you're looking at me kind of like you might have some.
No.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we are moving on here to bylaws review, and I'm going to turn that over to the manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The staff does not have any recommended changes. We are tracking since last year a couple of small grammatical changes that the board members were interested in having. Last year we delayed that decision because it would require a full assembly review, and we continue to support that approach and do not have any other changes.
Okay, comments or questions on the bylaws?
Yes, I don't have my copy in front of me, so, but under the sunset review, there was something that was confusing to me. It says, on or before November 15th, 2015, the board shall conduct a thorough assessment of the activities, et cetera. I thought that was amended in 2020.
I encourage you to open your mic.
It was amended in 2020?
I thought so, but...
Change eight.
I don't know if that's just historical language that should be changed.
We would have to take that question. I do see on this, I do see in this version that the latest amendment was in 2020. I would have to go and see what that amendment was, and if that's okay, I'll put that under director request for information.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Just curious, since I think, Elena, you're going to be reporting to the assembly later this, like next Thursday, and on the top of page four, our bylaws state that it's the chair should brief the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly at least quarterly unless delegated by the chair to another director.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, as the general manager, typically report and not the chair, or?
In my experience, and that's been since before I took over, the general manager reports, and the board member designee accompanies. It's never been different. The board might change how it
goes. But the chairman doesn't say a word.
Yeah.
It says that it looks pretty.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's
a high. Okay, check.
The chair could just introduce the general manager and see if we give the report. I think that would solve the bylaws rather than be totally silent.
That was my obligation. I flubbed it already.
Except the good-looking part.
Yeah. Okay. So, under reports, I've already been informed that we didn't have a finance committee, so we have no report. Operational report, George. You have people clamoring for gas.
Yep, not the first time I've run into that spot.
Yeah.
Bear with me, I have to find the right thing. All right, so construction's out in full bore. So far we've got over 6,200 feet of mainline as of when I wrote this up last week installed. So I think we've completed at least another 600 this week since coming back from the holiday. We're about to start extensive work downtown on extending over to the water plant, and that one's going to be a prolonged project. We're hoping to wrap up by the end of the month, but that one's going to be a struggle, long diameter and a bunch of conflicting utilities. Making good progress on the service lines. 75 of the 173 have been installed as of last Tuesday, and distribution engineering has all but 21 of the permit applications in, but we have a handful more that keep arriving, so plenty to keep us busy on that front. A lot of ongoing projects in storage and distribution, but things of note is we did have one lost time injury that was reported this last month. We've had a handful of turn-ons, a whole bunch of meter inspections to get done, launching into line patrols and leakage surveys after that, and just keep plugging forward on everything. On the Titan front, a lot of back and forth between myself and PHMSA on trying to get an inactive status procedure fully in place to minimize some of our reporting requirements. And PHMSA, we've got our audit coming up in September. Things are looking good on that front. Feel pretty well prepared for it, but still a lot more light work just to make sure all our bases are covered. Gas supply, inventory's been good. As long as Middle Fork keeps them on the road, supply chain's been pretty smooth. And some good news is we got the final production schedule for some of the new trailers. So we're working to get those, starting picking up the 21st, grab them one a week. And then the last one will be a little bit behind there in October. So setting up the trucking to get those up here.
George, so how many serviceable North Slope LNG trailers do we have?
So we are at 19 right now? No.
We had 19 to start with, right?
We have 13 premieres.
Four
files.
17 at the moment.
17. Okay, and does that, is there any scenario where 17 trailers will put us at a shortage?
When we get into hauling six a day, and when we get further in the season, yes, it could. But with the projected hauls for the summertime, with us doing four or five a day, that's enough to keep us in good standing.
Okay.
And by the time we hit the wintertime and have those six loads a day scheduled, we have the additional units that will have been delivered. So,
Derek.
Derek, one of those new trailers in town, would you come?
Yeah.
I'd like to see it.
Sure will.
Yeah. Derek.
I'm just curious, kind of trying to connect Jim Richardson's testimony earlier, his neighborhood on 6th, 8th Avenue. Also being mindful of the constraints, Elena, that you outlined with regard to expanding main lines. George, does IGU have like a geographic map of Fairbanks and these hot spots where you're trying to prioritize and you're trying to get a critical mass of folks to sign up service agreements? Is there like a list of, these are our top 10 neighborhoods, and is Jim's on that top 10 list?
So what we have is a overlay of our ArcGIS map, where all of the gas service requests that have come in are overlaid with red dots on it, and that's reviewed for areas that have high interest. It's taken into consideration every year, and we'll reach out and contact those folks to gauge interest and try to come up with the areas to build out in.
Thank you. And the customer service shop was mentioned earlier as far as sending the postcards out. Is the business, I can't remember his name, the business development officer, is he part of that conversation too, or doing reach out like that as well in tandem with the customer service?
Yes, Bradley is involved in it, but he is a lot more involved on the commercial side.
Okay.
So he does a lot of push to the large facilities around town and getting the larger burners of gas, which to some extent we need to prioritize our remaining grant funding or Senate appropriations to try to make sure we're getting the folks that are going to burn the most product. That's part of the way we keep driving, holding rates low for the rest of the community. So,
thank you.
Chad.
Is the red dot an actual service agreement or just a service request?
No, it's a two-stage process where a service request comes in and then the agreement is followed after that.
And the agreements, so it's the service request that drives the expansion and not the agreements itself?
So in order for an agreement to exist, both parties have to commit to each other, right?
Okay.
IGU to the customer and the customer to IGU. So the dots are somebody who, one of us didn't fully commit. The agreements drive the expansion, however, we don't map the agreements, because once we tell somebody, yes, we will install a main line to you, we no longer have to map it. We know exactly where we're going.
Okay. But in other words, if they sign an agreement, they know that they're going to have access to gas within a period of time.
Correct. And in fact, the instructions are, if you don't have gas right in front of your property, do not sign an agreement. We do not want your application fee. Wait for us to confirm.
So the red dots do drive the expansion.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else, George?
It's all from my end.
Okay.
I can't complain, Mr. Chairman. You wanted them here.
Our attorney is missing from the board. Are you out there?
Do you want the GM report? Do you want the GM report?
I jumped over it again. Okay, that's what I have with you.
Okay. So you have my written report. I will bore you reading all the details. So a couple of corrections. So the Borough Assembly update is now scheduled for August 6th. The following one is October 15th. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you plan on attending or if you'd like to have a conversation with the board and assign any participants there. But we have August 6th and October 15th. I will be out on PTO July 20th through 24th. I'll still be available on my phone. Trucking is the LNG inventory is looking good, like George reported. One of the things that the board is going to see in our future projection is that we're going to expect more LNG in July than we did before. There was a planned outage on the that Harvest was going to take for 3 weeks in July, which the contract allows them to take scheduled maintenance. They no longer need to have that, so we're just going to continue trucking activities. We also were going to have a four-week shutdown in mid-August through mid-September, and that is now going to be 3 weeks. And so we're going to be in a better position inventory-wise come the winter than the budget anticipated. I have a couple of items here that were director requests for information. So if you go to page 35 of Director Bogan, I believe that's what you were asking for. On page 35, the difference between heating oil and natural gas over the years. I think one important thing that I like to point out to people is you see the drop in the green line around 2015, 2016. That is when FNG assets became transferred to IGU and IGU took over, and so that drop was the what I can only imagine the profit margin that the private company was charging. And if you see the increases in the later years there in 24, 25, etc., we are just now getting to being above the 2015 pricing for natural gas. And then you can see what the cost of delivered heating oil has done over the years. The last time heating oil was cheaper than natural gas was on a BTU to delivered heating oil was cheaper than natural gas on a BTU to BTU basis was during COVID. FNG started tracking this information. IGU continued tracking this information, but every 2 weeks this is updated. We call five or six biggest companies that deliver fuel. We ask them for their prices. We make an average, and that's what's recorded.
Okay.
And this is residential. You ask them for residential prices.
Correct. Then as we go forward, page 36 and 37 has IGU current debt obligations. We discussed this during the budgeting process, but we have the ADA loan, and that's our biggest debt obligation that's outstanding. It's $139 million. It is not payable yet. We then have our revenue bond, the loan for this building, and then a land purchase that we are still paying Golden Valley Electric for, and that's the land that Site 4 sits on. And that's the totality of our debt obligation. And then because the ADA loan is our biggest obligation out there, and it has a rather interesting financial structure, it's broken down on the following page. There's a very good chance that we're going to be able to have the initial deferral the demand deferral, where we're going to be able to, for a period of 5 years, once the loan becomes due, make interest-only payments, and the interest is 0.25% annualized. That debt obligation is about $350,000 a year. And then once the full loan becomes due, that's about $4.1 million a year for a period of 35 years.
Okay. Any questions?
Remind me what our total revenue is.
38 million. Operating revenue. As a ranch, you're getting up to about 40, depending on how many grants.
So 10% of our revenue would have to go to paying off the debt. And is this in today's dollars or in 2038 dollars? This is today's dollars. I mean, this is an actual set dollar.
Right.
And by 2038, we should be, our revenue should be increased considerably by then.
One would hope.
All right. Okay. Yes.
Yes, sir.
To your point, I was thinking this is why we should bring it into purview here, because I'm wondering what's the long-term plan for making a $4.15 million payment annually to ADA in 2038 without raising customer rates. What would be the minimum annual throughput, BCF, to service this debt? The original financing assumed demand approaching 5 BCF, while the FY27 budgets project only 1.5 BCF. So what is a realistic forecast over the next 10 years? What happens if customer growth remains flat, gas prices rise, things happen with oil prices, or grants decline? And then the FY27 debt coverage ratio is 1.7, but only 1.15 without the state grant. How dependent are we on grant funding to remain financially healthy? How confident are we that IG will qualify for the additional 5-year interest-only deferral through 2037?
So, that was a list of questions.
Yes.
Do you want to start with an answer to any specific one of them, or do you want to just remember?
I just wanted to throw out these questions. I feel like it's my fiduciary responsibility to bring it up at a board meeting, so I don't know if it's something that I can hand off to.
So the questions are on the record. Did you want to try to get an answer today, or would you like to?
Yeah, it'd be nice. It doesn't have to be today, but I would like to get. See
at a board meeting?
That'd be fine.
Okay. Zach, do you think we can handle that?
I'll handle it.
Say, Jim. Yeah. One more comment I'll make, though, is that IG has never pretended that we wouldn't have a rate hike when we started to make these $4 million payments. That's always been the plan. That's always been envisioned to a rate hike when we start having to make that payment.
To that point, would it be better to start raising rates now so it's not this big structural change in the future?
Won't do any. Rates are as forward.
Fair enough.
Because of the debt coverage ratio, we even have a debt coverage ratio through ADA. So even if you raise rates now, it's not going to affect the future rate making, because we have to make sure that we can cover our debt coverage payments and interest moving forward.
So I guess the biggest question then would be, in 2038, how are we going to make the annual $4.15 million payment?
Since everybody seems to be staring at me, I jump in anytime you want, because I know you've got a lot more to say than I do.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yes. We're on the same page for this, so.
With the chair's permission, I'd like to give my full answer in executive session.
Approved.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else? Sure.
No, that's all.
Okay. Cool. And related, more to your report.
Okay.
More to the manager's report.
No, nothing else to the manager's report. A reminder that we took the financials out of the consent agenda.
Yes. But does the finance committee plan to review the May?
Well, we will plan on, I've already reviewed the May, and we will plan to address them in the next meeting, yes. That's my intent.
So my intent was to put approval off until the next meeting.
Ah, okay.
Okay. And Zane, are you out there?
I am.
Do you have a report?
I do have a report.
Seems
it's the first time in my history of representing IGU in 1 month. I did absolutely no work, no legal work for IGU. So I guess you can take that as overall a good sign. It was a little slow, which is fine.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Zane. I like the new look. Okay. I guess at this time, Derek, we should probably move into executive session.
Do you want to do a director request since you're the one?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do director request. So, Gary? No request.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
No, thank you.
Gary?
Maybe. And I don't want to overstep or overthink this, but just with regard to Jim Richardson, like, is it appropriate for the board to craft a very short email recognizing, hey, thank you for being at the meeting, we heard you, here are three follow-ups, here are three actions. You know, I don't want to overstep, and I would look to management to help us craft that communication, but I'd like to be able to have him receive something from the board that we heard you, you were here. And
Gary?
It might be good for us, for the record, and for Jim Richardson's appearance here today. When I was in the food business years ago, Jim also was in the food business as a purveyor. And Jim would come in to our office on a regular basis, twice a month. And Jim would be a pain in the ass. But, now having said that, he hasn't changed, but what I learned from Jim is that what he's complaining about is something that is good. We would address in our business what he was complaining about, and we got better. So when I saw him outside the front door this afternoon, I thought the same thing. And I would just tell the board and tell management that he's not owing that. He's not paying the ass. He's somebody here to make things better, and whatever we can do to respond to Jim will make us better and him a customer and a better customer. So I just offer that as a little history.
I think, as I thought about his comments and how it should be addressed, it should be addressed from the management, rather than the board. Certainly, we offer people a chance to put input into the board. I think rarely you know, do we respond to them directly as a board? You know, managing the responsibility. If you want to draft something, Gary, for the board to consider, you know, maybe the next meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Did I get you, Gary?
Yeah.
Okay. Jack, did I get you?
Yeah. No, you didn't, but I say no.
Okay. Thank you. And then, Derek, were you handed a...
yes, it was.
And would you tell me how it ends again so that I know if we're going to have a chance to consider something when we come out, or are we going to adjourn?
We're
going to
adjourn.
Okay.
Do you want to change it?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to be said. So it just seems odd to me that we automatically adjourn when we don't know really what's going to be said in the executive session.
Oh, we can just strike it out portion of the motion, and then once we adjourn the executive session, the meeting does not adjourn, and then you'll just have to do a separate motion to end the meeting.
That would be my preference, Jack.
So, and it is not really applicable in this case, but we that policy was instigated, so because the minute we get out of executive session, if we're not already adjourned from the regular meeting, then we're in a public meeting again. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we chose to adjourn, because so then the public would know there's not going to be any business expiring once we come out of executive session. So, I'm just saying how we got into that habit.
Yeah, okay.
Because there was a period of time when there was a lot of public interest.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
A lot of these things.
We can stop adding that to the motion.
Yeah, why don't we do that, at least for the time being, and you know, I'll keep in mind that, you know, Jack's comments, and if we have, if that becomes a concern, we can readdress it. So, Derek, will you please drag that in the last portion?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that the board enter executive session to discuss the Middle Fork relationship, and business development matters, the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of Interior Gas Utility, to include the Board of Directors, General Manager Elena Sudduth, CFO Zach Dameron, Director of Operations George Deal, and Executive Assistant Erica Lerbrick.
Okay, second.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we go into executive session to regular session. And do you have anything to add in regular session, Gary?
I'd like to thank Elena and Derek and Jeff for the help and the perspective. I don't know what other people got. I got four comments, two from family and two from people I didn't know.
You got one from me, if you remember what I told you. I thought it was a good article.
I got that. That makes five.
There we go.
How about Kathy? She
thought it was a good article.
Six. Yeah. Anyway, I thank you. Elena set the foundation for us to jump off of and put that together. And I asked you, is there a sense that we want to meet with the editorial, whatever it is, board,
editorial,
such as it is today?
I did not recommend that, but if I think they're well informed on what IGU is doing, but I'm happy to set that up if the board decides otherwise.
Well, I mean, it's kind of up to Jim, but it just seems like they don't give us any credence at all, and
maybe we should send Jim Richardson over there. Tell him how good gas is.
Yeah, better get the line to his house before you do that.
Yeah. Sherry, Derek, Jack.
I'm ready to adjourn.
I'm sorry.
I'm ready to adjourn.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.